Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Canadian singer-songwriter Sean Desmond comes from a groundbreaking era of music that paved the way for the next generation of artists we see today. With a deep history of success, Sean exploded onto the scene, making waves across the country with his signature sound and style. He left a lasting mark on an entire generation of Canadians, earning a platinum-selling album, 5 platinum-certified singles, multiple chart-topping radio hits, and a slew of awards, including a Juno for R&B Soul Recording of the Year, 3 MMVAs, and multiple SOCAN awards for songwriting. In 2023, Sean made an unprecedented return to the stage, headlining the OVO All-Canadian North Star show and releasing his top 10 radio smash Maniac, which catapulted him back to the forefront of the industry. What followed was a whirlwind of national media coverage, chart climbs, and viral moments that reached hundreds of millions of viewers across the country, reminding everyone why he remains one of Canada's most celebrated music success stories. Sean has continued his momentum into 2024 and 2025 with another multi-format top 10 hit, Body, featuring Jamie Fine. With sold-out shows, massive streaming numbers, and continued viral traction, Sean's staying power has never been more evident. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Sean Desmond. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am in Canada. I live in Canada here in Toronto, and I'm doing great.
I've been to Toronto, and I remember when I was coming to visit my friend, she said the only months I'm allowed to come are June, July, or August. Otherwise, I'm not allowed to come.
100%. Unless you want to freeze, you know what's off. You don't want to come in the other months.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be on this path of music creation, and how did that journey progress?
So I was actually 9 years old. I performed for the first time ever at my grade school talent show. I was a big fan of New Kids on the Block at the time, I think as many people were. And I performed a New Kids on the Block song. And I remember that recess, everybody came out and basically was bombarding me. And like, it felt like I was already like a celebrity at that point, like at the school. And I loved the feeling of being on stage and singing. So I went home that day and I told my parents, I said, hey, I think I want to be a singer. Imagine a nine-year-old coming home saying, hey, I want to be a singer. So I'm of Portuguese descent, Portuguese background. So they took me to like this Portuguese singing school that was close to my house. They didn't really know any better. My parents were not in the music business, didn't really have any idea what to do. So they take me and I meet the gentleman that's there. He's also a producer. And he's like, oh, he's really good. You know, we should start doing some stuff. And I ended up recording an album in Portuguese that year. And following that, I recorded like 4 more Portuguese albums. So I was kind of like the Portuguese, say, Justin Bieber in Canada, which is, for a lack of a better term. So I did that for a lot of years. So everybody knew me in the huge Portuguese community in Canada. So everybody knew me from that. And then when I was about 16, I kind of finally realized that I've hit the ceiling of where that's going to take me. There's not really, you know, anywhere left for me to go with that. And I've started just writing and producing English music on my own at home in my bedroom. And I would send in demo cassettes to record labels at that day, which was, you know, the late 90s, was still cassette tapes. So I would send in tapes. And then one day I get a phone call from BMG Music, who at the time had like the Backstreet Boys, had Britney Spears, had Christina Aguilera. And they called me and they invited me in for a meeting. And literally within a couple of months, I had my record deal. And that we were off to the races.
Now, when you were releasing music or those 4 albums in Portuguese, was that independent or with a label?
No, it was independent. One of them did come out through a label in Portugal, and I did a bunch of touring there, but the rest were independent.
Obviously, you had your parents helping you, or how did you navigate being an independent at a young age?
Yeah, no, my dad kind of played as like my manager at the time and really, you know, did his best, you know. And then when I signed my deal with BMG, then I finally was like, okay, I think I need like a real manager, somebody that knows the music business. And so signed a deal with a different guy. And my dad kind of gave up the reins, which he was totally fine with. And yeah, I went and traveled to Sweden. I was 18 for the first time ever, not being at home, traveling by myself, recording a record. First album comes out in 2002. It's a platinum record, 3 monster singles on it. And like I said, yeah, we're off to races from then. Another album in 2005, which was a gold album, 2 massive singles from that album as well. And then took a little bit of a break. 2009, put out another album with Universal and ended up having the 3 biggest songs of my career at that time. Then stepped away from the music business in like 2015. I felt like I didn't love it anymore and I wasn't passionate about it. So, which happens. So stepped away. And then in 2022, I got a phone call from Drake asking me to perform at his big OVO show here in Toronto. And I was like, dude, I don't know. Like, I haven't performed. I kind of stepped away. I'm not really doing music anymore. And he was like, yeah, don't worry about it. Come. It's going to be great. People love to see you. And I was like, all right. You know, at that point, I didn't really think people cared about Sean Desmond anymore. So I go do the show. Crowd goes absolutely wild. And I was just like, what is happening right now? And after the show, Drake pulls me aside. And was like, yo, man, like, what are you doing? Why are we making music? And I was like, Drake, honestly, I just fell out of love with the music business. You know, it's, you know, chews you up, spits you out. And he's like, yeah, I get that. We all feel like that. I'll probably feel like that at some point. But he's like, trust me, those people love you. You should make music again. And here I am. I've put out like 3-4 singles since 2022, 2023. My first one went top 10 here in Canada called Maniac. And then now, as we were talking before we started, Body with Jamie Fine was a monster song this summer here, top 5 in Canada. So just super, super grateful to still be here and still be doing what I love.
Do you think being an independent artist at a younger age, especially in your teenagers, gave you a good grounding and foundation that when you catapulted and exploded, it allowed you to have some grounding compared if you hadn't been through that experience?
I think so, because there is some really humble times when you're an independent artist. You know what I mean? But I have to say, Bear, that that also comes with your upbringing. You know, so my parents came from nothing. We didn't have a lot. We never owned a house. My parents were always renting apartments. So we didn't have a lot, but they made sure me and my brothers always had what we needed. So I really take that with me, and I have kids now, and I always try to explain to them that, you know, we have to be grateful for everything that we have, and, you know, we got to work hard for things, because that's how things happen. Stuff is not just given to you on a silver platter. Nothing was given to me on a silver platter. Although some people at the time when I came out would think, oh, this happened overnight. Meanwhile, they didn't see that the 15 years before, you know, all the work I'd put in, you know what I mean?
So when you have that projected onto you, at that young time, because obviously you were still young, did that affect you, or did you just think, they don't know what they're talking about?
I don't let a lot of stuff bother me, and I didn't kind of think it like that. I was just like, I'm doing what I love to do, and I'm just going to continue doing that and, you know, block all the noise out as hard as it is, which I think is also probably harder now because there was no social media in 2000 when I was coming up, and there was nothing. So like, when you wanted to see fans or talk to fans, you actually had to see them in person, where now anybody across the world can interact with you on social media, right? So, you know, we know there's a lot of not so nice people on social media. But yes, so I think it was very different. But I think now if you're starting out as an independent artist and whatnot, there's a little more pressure. It's different. Workload is crazy. Social media is its full-time job in itself. It's hard. It's not an easy business for sure.
Referencing fans on social media now, a lot of fans see you every day. They think they know you. We love the fans. Just bring this out to all the fans. We love the fans. But they think they know you. Have you had experiences in the past where when you met the fan or fans and they were coming to you as a friend, thinking they know you from experiencing you on the screen, were there any awkward situations that you had to like sort of balance out because it was an unbalanced experience, if you know what I'm talking about?
Not so much in person, but you do bring up a good point. It's funny because sometimes like I'll meet somebody and they'll tell me something and I'm like, how do you even know that? You know, how do you know that? But I've had a couple of situations like online where, you know, I'm very active on my socials. If you look at my socials, I comment on every post, every comment that somebody makes, I comment. And sometimes in like the DMs, like somebody will message me and I'll just say, thank you, send a heart. And then they go into like this long thing about their life, asking me for advice. And I'm like, there's like a line there. You know what I mean? Like there's a line that you can't cross. And it's like, hey, I'm nice and thank you for being a fan, but like, I'm not here to like hear the therapist. My own problems to worry about, you know, like, so that happens quite a lot, actually.
I find it interesting because a lot of people in the world, when there are labels, and I say labels also in corporate or in situations, so a person is more wealthy, or they are a politician, or they, the CEO, a manager, an artist, an actor, people put them separate. They put them on sort of a pedestal and think, okay, well, now I need to put on this mask when I interact with these people, and sort of they away from me. And I find it quite fascinating. I've seen that in day-to-day experiences. My mindset is we all use two-ply toilet paper. There's no gold-plated toilet paper. If there was, people's backsides would be bleeding. I'm just saying. So the thing is that the same way I speak to you is the same way I speak to the people who do my spinning classes, the same way I speak to the person at the checkout counter. Everyone is equal. How do you navigate that in your life?
I'm really the same way, dude. And honestly, I tell people about me, like, what you see is what you get. If you don't like it, like, so be it. You know what I mean? I don't change for nobody. I'm fun. I'm funny. I like to curse a lot, which I'm not doing right now, but I do curse a lot. And yeah, I mean, when I meet somebody, I kind of think the same way. I'm just like, he's human like anybody else. It's very hard for me to be starstruck by anybody, you know, but I think that's what makes it cool. And I think that's what people appreciate, especially on socials. You know, the thing I get a lot is like, oh, we can relate with you. Like, you're so real. Like, there's no smoke and mirrors with you. Like, what you see is what you get. And I'm going to tell you like it is. You know what I mean?
Well, that's how it should be with everyone. But unfortunately, societal has these things of we have to wear masks in different situations.
Yeah.
How do you create a song?
I mean, it's always different. Sometimes it's through life experiences, an emotion, a feeling I'm feeling. Or sometimes I'm in the studio and I'm like, hey, guys, I just want to write something fun today. Or sometimes we get into the studio and the producer I'm working with plays something for me and it automatically like inspires a melody or like a certain lyric idea or a title. You know, it varies all the time. Sometimes I like to go into a session prepared with like concepts and titles and whatnot. But sometimes I just like to get there and just kind of like everybody in the room, let's just work together and come up with something. You know what I mean? For me, I'm a collaborator. I like writing songs with people where I know there are a lot of people that like writing on their own. I personally don't like doing that. I like bouncing off ideas and I like feeling energy off of people. So that's kind of like my favorite way to create for sure.
And when you're creating or collaborating with an artist or writer that you have not collaborated with before, is it a situation getting into the room, getting to know them and sort of feeling the energy, or do you dive straight in?
You always take about like half an hour, an hour when you've never met the person to kind of just like, you know, talk a little bit. Where are you from? What do you like? And then usually the writers or the producer will like straight up ask, like, what are you feeling these days? What do you want to talk about? And then we kind of go from there. Very rarely do we just like jump into a session. There's always some banter for sure back and forth.
Now, you referenced that you've released a few songs. Is it going to accumulate to a body of a work of another album?
A lot of the stuff I'm doing now are collaboration records. So obviously, I have Body with Jamie Fine. We have a remix of the Body with Sick Kick, who's like an incredible DJ producer from here in Canada. I have a country record coming out next month with a huge country act from Canada called Dallas Smith. I have a record with a Punjab artist coming out. So yeah, this kind of like, I'm doing like a collaborations project. So I've never done anything like that before. And I want to like never be put in this box of like one genre of music. I feel like pop music is so broad and there's so many different elements of pop music. So I feel like I want to touch on all those things. So
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work and your creativity. Mm-hmm. Love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the song from one to whatever number. I'm sure you may or may not be aware, massive uptick of physical around the world. 2 years ago, 5.9 million vinyls sold in the UK, biggest since 1990. Last year, also again in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a high number of exchanges daily for a product to be in this basket, because they monitor it for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older, in inverted commas, nostalgic people. Then we have streaming platforms that people also consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I definitely, I see what you're talking about the vinyl. Funny enough, we just did a 20-year special edition vinyl for my album that came out in 2005, which was my sophomore album, because people are buying vinyl. My son, who is 17, buys vinyl. He has a record player and he's buying vinyl. And it's definitely cool that this whole, like, a physical piece of something is coming back. Because I feel like if you're a fan, a real fan of an artist, you want something, you know, like you want something to hold on to be able to like have that piece of art from the artist that you love. You know what I mean? And I think we missed that for a long time. Listen, streaming is great. Don't get me wrong, because in the beginning, in my day, you know, 2000 to whenever, when there was no streaming, my music was very limited in terms of the reach. Now, with streaming, you're in South Africa and you can listen to Body with me and Jamie Fine, or you can listen to any Sean Desmond song you want, where that wasn't a thing before, you know? So I feel like in that sense, streaming is really elevated and given a reach to artists, for sure.
You referenced the album, the songs coming out with Dallas Smith, et cetera, et cetera. Anything else that's coming up that you can say? I know it's all very secretive in your guys' world.
Yeah. Putting out music, continuing to do that. Me and Nelly Furtado are really tight. So I'm talking to her about doing something with her. She's also Portuguese. We've been talking about it forever. It's just like finding the time and like, what is the song? Going on tour with Jamie Fine, actually, starting beginning in November. So I know she's in South Africa right now. She comes back and then we hop right to it. So I'm super excited about that. And then I'll probably take a little bit of a break. I don't want to burn out. I want to continue to enjoy the experience and everything that I'm going through. I don't know if you saw what's recently happened with like Lola Young and collapsing on stage. And, you know, this is real. These are real people who are working so, so hard and sometimes overworked that, you know, I don't ever want to be in that situation where I'm caught in that and not enjoying what I'm doing anymore. That's why I also gave huge kudos to Shawn Mendes when he was literally like, guys, I'm done. Like, he was on tour for probably like 3 years straight and finally put his foot down and was like, I'm not touring anymore. Like, I'm taking a break. It's nice that artists can advocate for themselves now. So I definitely will step away for a little bit, take a little bit of breather, but I'll come back and obviously do some more touring and stuff. But I do need to put the brakes on just a little bit.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, my God. It's the best. Actually, it's the best part of my job. The fans, you know, I've been doing this over 20 years, selling out shows for 20 years, and to have still incredible, committed fans, loyal fans, is amazing to me. So being up there, doing all the hits, listening to them sing all the words back, dancing to the records, is the best feeling. Literally, it's the best part of my job.
Okay, so I'm that guy that's right up in front. I'll dancing and jamming, as you mentioned. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I put it away. I notice these days that people are tweeting and posting and videoing and doing a lot around the phone instead of being in the moment. From the person on the stage, do you feel seeing a bunch of phones takes away from the experience or moment, or it's just where society is at this stage?
I think this is just where we are in 2025, Barrett. It's like adapt or die. You know what I mean? I will say at my shows, the phones aren't out the entire time. There are certain parts of the show where like certain songs will come on and I know the phones are going to come out. But most of the time they're not out, or, you know, sometimes they're out for the front row because they want me to grab it and like take a selfie video of myself singing, right? That happens a lot. But yeah, like I said, adapt or die. It's 2025. This is just what it is. This is where the world we live in right now.
Are you ever motivated to create or write songs in Portuguese?
Ooh, I just put out a song a few weeks ago called Miami, which has a little bit of Portuguese in it. That's the thing that I've been talking to with Nelly Furtado about too, is do we do something that's just Portuguese, or do we do like a Franco record, which is like English and Portuguese? But all my Portuguese fans are like, you should really do something in Portuguese again, do something in Portuguese. So it's definitely a conversation to be had, for sure.
And when you write a song in Portuguese to compare to writing something in English, and I know potentially you haven't written in Portuguese for quite a while, is it the same approach? You know, okay, this is what I'm going to create. This is the feeling. This is the energy. Or is it a completely different mindset?
I think it's the same. It's the same approach. English, Portuguese, Spanish, whatever it is. You just want to write something that means something to you or that you feel can mean something to somebody else. Because I feel like that's what music is. Music is the universal language. And you always want to try and make people feel something, you know, like when you hear a song, you know where you were and that the first time you heard that song, you can remember and go back to that moment. I think that's the beautiful thing about music. And so I'm always trying to create those types of moments for sure.
I'm not sure if you are aware of NLP. So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. That's the way people process information. Now, as part of that, there's a subsection of processing skills. Now, each of us has a dominant, secondary, and tertiary. Dominant means we'll be in it for most of the day. Secondary, couple of hours. Tertiary, half an hour, if at all. Something kicks in for each of us at a young age as a child that allows us to get a skill or dominance in one. So you've got visual people. Visual people create pictures in what they're processing. So as I'm talking now, a visual person will see a picture in their mind. Auditory people, it's about the word, the sentence, the paragraph. They understand through those aspects. Kinesthetic people, it's about the body language, tone of voice, energy, and emotion. Now, focusing specifically on music, when you're listening to a song, full song, not really in the creation process, a completed song, are you seeing pictures? Are you hearing the lyrics? Or is it about the emotion and feeling?
Ooh, that's tough. I feel like it's about the emotion and feeling. That's when I'm listening to a record, that's the first thing that comes over me is how I'm feeling when I'm listening to that record. It was like the first time I heard Gaultier, somebody that I used to know. I was like, goosebumps. I was just like, what is this? Like, how did this person create this masterpiece? So it gave me that feeling like this was like, holy crap, like what are we listening to right now? And I love that about that. Probably my favorite song of the last decade or longer. Yeah, so it's definitely an emotion and a feeling thing for me.
And then when you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to relax and just listen to it for what it is? Or is your creative brain unpacking what you're hearing?
A little bit of both. Sometimes I can listen to a song and be like, every melody in this record is perfect. Every lyric is perfect. And then sometimes I listen to stuff and I'm like, I might have done like a different pre-chorus melody and maybe changed that lyric. I don't even know why I'm thinking about those things, to be honest. I should be able to just like sit back and take it for what it is. You know what I mean? But it's always like the creative person in me is like always thinking.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. Because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. If you had to push play to five other artists once you finish this conversation, who would they be? And if you can think of songs, what songs would you play?
Michael Jackson, Human Nature. Prince, When Doves Cry. Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody. Phil Collins, Easy Lover. And probably Chicago, Hard to Say I'm Sorry. As you can tell, 80s is my jam. 80s is my favorite era of music ever. I feel like the best music was made in the 80s. That's just me.
Because I'm very much an avid follower of the music charts, the Billboard charts, the UK charts. The 80s, almost every song in the top 20, like, I love that. These days, not so much, but that's a discussion another time.
100%.
So Sean, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I mean, first of all, if you're just new here and don't really know who Sean Desmond is, I thank you for tuning in. Hope you go listen to the music. You can follow me on Instagram, Sean Desmond. Same on TikTok, Sean Desmond. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you wherever you are in the world one day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.